This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
At public.com, you can earn 5.1% APY with a high-yield cash account. And while we can't say it's officially the highest interest rate out there, we can say this. It's higher than Robinhood, SoFi, Wealthfront, Capital One, and the big banks, too. Ready to start earning 5.1% APY on your cash? Check out the High Yield Cash Account on public.com. This is paid for by Public Investing. 5.1% APY as of March 26, 2024, and is subject to change. A High Yield Cash Account is a secondary brokerage account with Public Investing, member FINRA/SIPC. Funds from this account are automatically deposited into partner banks where they earn a variable interest and are eligible for FDIC insurance. Neither Public Investing nor any of its affiliates is a bank. U.S. only. Learn more at public.com/disclosure/high-yield-account.
After more than 2 years of price increases, finally, a bit of a break. Sort of. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace. In Washington, D.C., I'm Kimberly Adams in for Kai Rizdahl. It's Wednesday, August 10th. Good to have you along. We got the much-anticipated Consumer Price Index from the Bureau of Labor Statistics this morning. And there are a bunch of numbers in there that give us different insights into the economy. First, month over month, consumer prices were pretty much unchanged between June and July, which feels like a relief after 25 months of price increases. Second, the year-over-year number, which still shows that prices are 8.5% higher than July of last year. Still better than the June numbers, but also still high. So, to wrap it up, on average, most stuff is about the same price as last month, but way more expensive than last year. But averages are just that. Individual products and categories are still fluctuating. For example, part of the reason for this month's slower inflation is a fall in gas prices. They've dropped roughly 20% from their peak in June. Marketplace's Lily Jamali gets us started with more on that.
The national average for a gallon of unleaded is $4, and drivers here in California, like those across the country, are paying less than they did 2 months ago. Crystal Lino has noticed.
I wish they would have fallen a lot earlier because I don't live very close to work.
Lino's a single mom. The commute to her job at a grocery store here in South Pasadena is about 15 miles each way.
When you work 5 days a week, it can add up very quickly. It's very hard to try and put aside gas money as well as like food and rent and stuff.
Food and rent keep getting more expensive even as prices at the pump fall. Because they're so volatile, gas prices can mislead when you're tracking inflation, says Severin Borenstein of UC Berkeley's Haas School of Business.
It's always one of the least reliable parts of the consumer price index.
He says gasoline has an oversized impact on the headline CPI number, which showed inflation staying steady in July. Core CPI, which strips out gas and food, showed inflation rising, albeit at a slower pace. Gas could get cheaper in the coming weeks as it adjusts to lower oil prices, but
in a month or two, oil and gasoline could be headed back up again.
Which could lead more Americans to drive less, a trend that's already underway, says Kelly Sanders at the University of Southern California.
Demand compared to last summer is down this summer about 10%, which is pretty significant.
But on a recent cross-country road trip in her hybrid, Sanders was surprised to see how little she paid for gas, just $678 for almost 5,000 miles. In South Pasadena, California, I'm Lily Jamali for Marketplace.
Another factor driving inflation, the cost of food, something most of us have definitely noticed. Overall, food costs are up almost 11% compared to last year. But if you drill a little deeper into that number, you'll find an interesting detail. the price of eating out has risen just over half as much as the cost of eating at home. So what gives? We asked Marketplace's Samantha Fields to find out.
Eating is a necessity. Eating out is not. And that is one of the main reasons Sucharita Kadali at Forrester Research says restaurants have been slower to raise their prices.
If restaurants were to raise their prices too quickly, many of them would probably see people pulling back and going back to grocery stores.
Or going to another cheaper restaurant instead. That's what Fiore Tedesco III is worried about, and it's why his restaurant, Locadoro, in Austin, hasn't increased prices in the last year.
I'm really nervous about raising prices and making it a more expensive experience for our guests.
Instead, so far, Tedesco's been changing up the menu a lot and designing dishes around cheaper ingredients.
We're serving like an eggplant milanesa right now. A few months ago, that was a chicken milanesa. That's my main solution. Serve more vegetables. I think we're really good at it and we can control the cost a little more.
But he says that's getting harder because everything is getting more expensive. Not just food, but labor too. And that's the other thing.
When you go to a restaurant, you're not just buying food, you're buying restaurant services.
Laura Veldkamp is at Columbia Business School.
So the price that you pay for a restaurant meal helps to cover the rent of the restaurant. It helps to pay for all the servers, for the dishwashers, for the cook.
And even though all of those costs are rising, they aren't rising as quickly as the cost of the food itself.
And so the restaurant meal increases by less.
But it may also just be a matter of time. Fiore Tedesco III at Locadoro says it's getting harder to keep absorbing all the increases.
So we're likely going to need to raise prices up to 10% sometime in the next several months.
But he's slow rolling it as much as he can. I'm Samantha Fields for Marketplace.
On Wall Street today, that inflation report looked better than most folks were expecting, and investors responded accordingly. We'll have the details when we do the numbers. In those early days of the pandemic, some transitioned into remote work and school without much fuss, while others were stranded with no internet or really slow internet. Particularly on tribal lands, where in 2020, around 18% of people didn't have a home internet connection. The federal government is spending billions of dollars to try to increase access, but the watchdog Government Accountability Office says there needs to be a more coherent strategy on tribal broadband expansion for that money to make an impact. Marketplace's Savannah Marr reports.
The digital divide on tribal lands is persistent. Tracy Morris would know. She's been trying to figure out how to narrow it for about 15 years. And she says the problem was pretty much invisible outside of Indian country until suddenly it wasn't.
2020 was a hard year because all of the sudden, all the things you've been working on become life and death.
Schools and workplaces and medical clinics were moving their operations online, and a lot of Native people were just left behind. Morris, who's Chickasaw and heads up the American Indian Policy Institute, says it was a relief to see the rest of the country take note, but it was also maddening.
Really? Y'all could have been working on this before. It's not like this is new. None of this is new.
During the pandemic, the federal government has made billions of dollars available for broadband infrastructure on tribal lands. It's licensed broadband spectrum to some tribal governments and helped their schools and libraries and hospitals pay their internet bills. But there's a missing puzzle piece, says Andrew Von Ah with the Government Accountability Office.
There's really no strategy that's sort of guiding how to leverage these different programs.
Dozens of agencies and programs are all trying to solve the same problem without really coordinating. And he says there's another issue.
There's a number of different barriers that tribes face that really discourage their participation in many of these programs.
To start, the programs require tribal governments to apply online, and those applications, plus the permitting processes that come after, are cumbersome. Tribes need full-time employees or hired consultants to manage them. As a result, Von Ah says,
that funding has typically gone to some of the largest tribes.
Because smaller ones, and those without economic development arms, lack capacity. Matthew Rantanen, who's Cree and works on broadband for the National Congress of American Indians, says these stumbling blocks point to a lack of preparation. He says tribes were asking for these investments over a decade ago, before there was a crisis.
Building out broadband takes time, and to react and then to build something overnight was not an option. So we're still in the process of building out a lot of the things that were discussed at the very beginning of the pandemic.
Like the Tribal Broadband Connectivity Program. It set aside $1 billion federal for broadband deployment.
And roughly 300 tribes,
around half of those that were eligible,
applied for $5.84 billion for the total solution.
And nearly a year after the application window closed, the federal government is just now rolling out funding for some of those projects. Tracy Morris with the American Indian Policy Institute says once the feds figure out how to get funding into the hands of tribal governments,
they will start to move the needle. I think they will significantly when it finally happens, when they finally get the money out, when people finally are able to start building.
For now, she says many tribal communities still can't fully participate in our increasingly online world. I'm Savannah Marr for Marketplace.
As many of our regular listeners know, we like to check in with people we've had on our show, from storefront owners to folks who literally run their businesses on wheels. And in retail, changes happen pretty fast and frequently too, so you have to be ready to adjust. Here's Jenny Yang and Chris Capizzi, co-owners of A Good Used Book and wife and husband duo, with this update on how their business is going.
Well, since the last time we spoke, I mean, things changed a lot. We ended the residency right before Christmas, and then we went back to totally being online. We started, like, really seriously started our search for a permanent location.
Right now, we are a pop-up business, and we, even though we're so suited for pop-ups because of the way that our setup is, there really isn't a lot of places where used books can kind of go. We are really open to doing more events. We just don't really know where we fit in.
We're not really affected by a lot of the things that have been happening to all the supply chains as much. I mean, there are like real costs that we're bearing now that have increased.
For us, especially when we're just only online and we're such a small company, when shipping costs, you know, they've been, you know, increasing, and, you know, we just have so many supplies that we are constantly in need of, like the plastic that we use to like cover the paperbacks. All those costs and all those little things really add up, especially because we're just such a small company. I think the most important thing right now for our future plans is really looking for a location. We really want to have that space to be able to, you know, work out of, to sell books out of, and that seems to be the most important thing for us.
Yeah, I definitely agree that finding our location is the most important thing. Our operations are sort of scattered where we live in LA and then we work in another part of LA for retail, but our warehouse is outside of the city. And so that commute is taking its toll. And so, you know, that's part of us looking for a new location or a permanent location. Is to just kind of consolidate all the operations so that we're more efficient and we're just not like scattered all over the place. And maybe, you know, after being pushed fully online at the beginning of the pandemic and kind of dipping back into that each time that we end a pop-up, I think showed us how much we actually love the physical retail experience.
And we do believe that, you know, all of it works together, like the online business and having, you know, social media and having, you know, a website and like a location where you can pick up and also browse for more books. And so for us, we really want to be able to have that full experience for people.
That was Chris Capizzi and Jenny Yang, co-owners of A Good Used Book, popping up around LA. Coming up.
And some of them can't even run because they don't have enough staff.
Calling all camp counselors, we need you. But first, let's do the numbers. The Dow Jones Industrial Average rose 535 points, 1.6% to close at 33,309. The Nasdaq gained 360 points, 2.9% to finish at 12,854. Wow, those horns are happy. The S&P 500 added 87 points, 2.1% to end at 4,210. Since Sam Fields was talking about food away from home, restaurant chain Wendy's dropped 1.75% on worse than expected second quarter revenue. Salad store Sweetgreen also missed analyst revenue expectations, but it added 8%. McDonald's heated up almost 0.5%. Bond prices rose. The yield on the 10-year T-note fell to 2.78%. And you're listening to Marketplace.
Looking for the highest interest rate on your cash? At Public.com, you can earn 5.1% APY with a high-yield cash account. And while we can't say it's officially the highest interest rate out there, we can say this. It's a higher rate than Robinhood, a higher rate than SoFi, a higher rate than Marcus, a higher rate than Wealthfront, frankly, a higher rate than Capital One, a higher rate than Ally, a higher rate than Barclays, a way higher rate than Bank of America and Chase, a higher rate than Citi, Wells Fargo, Discover, and it's a higher rate than American Express, too. So if you want to start earning 5.1% APY on your cash, check out public.com. We can't say it's the highest interest rate, but it's pretty darn up there. This is paid for by Public Investing, 5.1% APY as of March 26, 2024, and is subject to change. A high-yield cash account is a secondary brokerage account with Public Investing, member FINRA/SIPC. Funds from this account are automatically deposited into partner banks where they earn a variable interest and are eligible for FDIC insurance. Neither Public Investing nor any of its affiliates is a bank. U.S. only. Learn more at public.com/disclosure/high-yield-account. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/marketplace, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/marketplace now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/marketplace.
With access to so much information, it's hard to feel like an informed, discerning citizen. That's why on Make Me Smart, which is a podcast from Marketplace, we make it easy for you to stay in the know. Hi, I'm Kai Rizdahl. Every weekday, Kimberly Adams and I unpack the latest from Washington, D.C.
The Senate minority leader has announced that he will step down as the Republican leader.
What's happening in AI? I mean, don't buy at the top, but holy cow, artificial intelligence and all the companies related to it are the hot new thing. And we do the numbers.
So as a refresher, inflation is the rate of increase in the prices of things. It's not just sort of things getting more expensive. It's the speed at which things get more expensive.
Because in a world that's constantly changing, we all need to stay smart. Listen to Make Me Smart wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Marketplace. I'm Kimberly Adams. It's the impossible to find unsubscribe button. The app that uses tracking as an opt-out rather than an opt-in. They're called dark patterns, design tactics that get you to do something you probably wouldn't have otherwise. Harry Brignall, a UK-based user experience specialist, first coined the term more than a decade ago, and he has a special Hall of Shame on his website dedicated to calling out dark patterns.
When I started out, I actually thought I was going a bit crazy and I was the only person who was seeing this sort of thing on the web. But the more I looked, the more I found. And over the years, it's just grown and grown. And now the list is like astronomically long. Any company you can think of that's fairly well known probably has something in the Hall of Shame.
What's the most egregious example of a dark pattern that you've seen?
Well, I think the worst examples are the ones that have a real outcome of harm for consumers. And one of the main outcomes of harm is around money. Mm. For example, you might be buying a ticket with a low-cost airline and you find out somehow you've ended up paying for stuff you didn't ask for, like premium seats or travel insurance or extra hold baggage or whatever. If it's property rental, it might be a cleaning fee and a service fee or a resort fee. That's designed to waste your time, to hook you in, to reel you in and to wear you out. So by the time you get to the end, you feel, even though it's not the price you're expecting, you may as well just pay and get it over with. And that's happening to millions of customers every week. That's a lot of profit that can be made through those sorts of tricks.
We've all seen and experienced these. And I think a lot of us have sort of, you know, gotten smart about how to navigate them and avoid them. They are annoying. But, you know, you talk about the harm when it costs you money. But is there any sense that this is really damaging and widespread?
All companies use some form of manipulation or other. The real question is, does it have outcomes of harm? Is it a dark pattern? Does it deceive you into things? And I mean, even though you might think you're wise to them, like a lot of consumers would say, well, I know about all this stuff, I won't be caught out. You still get caught out anyway, and your time gets wasted. And let's face it, we've all got a finite amount of time on this planet. And to be given the runaround on things is really not fair.
That's grim. What kind of regulations are there around these types of strategies?
So what's interesting is when I started out with this stuff, that it wasn't a very regulated area. And in the last 4 or 5 years, the topic has kind of exploded. And suddenly we've got these new regulations coming in, which is quite exciting. Mm-hmm. In California, you've got the CPRA, and in Colorado, the CPA. Those are both laws about privacy, and they aim to stop companies from tricking you into giving them permission to do stuff with your personal data, like tracking you and then selling the information to third parties. So both of those laws have definitions of dark patterns in them, and they forbid certain types of dark patterns, which is a really good thing. In Europe, we've got something called the Digital Services Act incoming. That's the DSA. And it forbids some kinds of dark patterns, which is really great. But the law hasn't yet arrived. It's kind of, the wording's been agreed, but it hasn't been kind of launched yet. So we don't know quite how effective it will be. Because obviously you want to help consumers with the law, but you also don't want to hurt businesses at the same time. You want a nice, healthy balance so you have a healthy marketplace.
There have also been some lawsuits around this, even against some of the tech giants like Google. Where do things stand, at least on the legal side in the courts?
I guess one of the great things about the United States is you have all these class action lawsuits, which are a great way of getting companies to step into line. I mean, I think these lawsuits are good, and the more of them that happen, the more aware other companies will be. So these big sort of spotlight cases where big fines are enacted are really, really good for consumers because it'll make these other companies think twice before they do these things.
So where do you see the industry moving in regards to using these strategies and these dark patterns? And how do you think consumers are going to be responding to them or just dealing with them, I guess?
Well, I think there's going to be a bit more regulation and there's going to be some more laws, and there'll probably be some good ones written and some bad ones written. And I think we'll learn, you know, globally, different countries are going to do different things. And I think, obviously, when the laws change and they know that they're up for really big fines or big problems, they're going to pay attention. If there's one language that businesses speak, it's the language of money. And I think that would be very good for consumers, who will then have a safer World Wide Web and a safer app stores to use.
Harry Brignall is a user experience specialist in the UK. His Hall of Shame of Dark Patterns is at deceptive.design. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
Back to inflation now, and another area where families are feeling it is in the cost of childcare. Even if you can't afford childcare, finding it for your kid has been hard at any time of the year. But it can be extra difficult during the summer, often involving a patchwork of babysitters, family members, and summer camps. And it's even more challenging this year, as many camps have been forced to reduce capacity or close programs completely because they can't find enough staff. As Maine Public Radio's Robbie Feinberg reports, it's left some parents scrambling.
Good morning, campers! Good morning, campers!
The sun is barely above the tree line as Chris Shea welcomes roughly 80 kids to this day camp organized by the YMCA of Auburn Lewiston in central Maine. Each day, the campers scatter across 93 acres of woods and fields, with enough space for all of the classic summer camp activities. There's archery.
Bring your arrow all the way to your mouth. There you go.
Oh, yes, he finally hit it.
A ropes course.
Awesome. Good job, guys. Good work.
And many campers' favorite activity, swimming. Shea says it's a valuable experience for a lot of kids. For around $175 a week, Shea says it's a way to get them outdoors and socializing with new friends, something especially important after years of remote and hybrid schooling. But even as he looks out at dozens of smiling faces, Shea says this summer's camp can sometimes feel strangely empty.
It's almost like half the numbers you want to see in front of you as you give announcements, so it's a little discouraging and disappointing, but I guess it is what it is, and you do the best you can with what you've got.
The Y anticipated around 120 kids here this summer, but Shea says the organization wound up limiting capacity to about 80 campers. That's because of a problem affecting camps across the country, a shortage of counselors as more young people opt for other summer jobs.
I think it's competition for sure.
Megan Hamblett, the executive director of the YMCA Alliance of Northern New England, says working at a camp means lots of training and responsibility, and pay is generally around $15 an hour. So as wages and benefits have risen at other places, like grocery stores, she's seeing more young people head there instead.
And so some of our camps are only 50% full. Some are not running. We have some Ys who have multiple day camps, and some of them can't even run because they don't have enough staff.
And those closures have left some parents scrambling. For years, Rita Butah has sent her daughter to a day camp in Ellsworth along Maine's downeast coast. But without enough staff this year, the program was canceled.
It was a sickening feeling knowing that my daughter wasn't going to have childcare for the next couple of months for summer.
Butah managed to find a couple of other camps for her daughter to attend for a few weeks, and her parents have helped when they can. But on many days, she works overnight shifts at the local Shaw's grocery store so she can still care for her daughter during the day.
Like tonight, I'll have to go in and work overnight, but tomorrow we'll spend the day together. You know, so we're all just compromising and just trying to make the best of it.
At the YMCA camp in Auburn, Director Chris Shea says he talked with a grandmother just that morning who was looking for care. He says it was hard to have to say no, especially when so few other child care options exist.
So it's a little frustrating, but the grandmother I talked to this morning understood. But like I said, the kids that we have out here, they're loving it. They're having a great time at camp. I just wish more could take advantage of it.
Many camp directors say they've tried increasing pay and benefits with little success so far. Some day camps are now looking at bringing in international students on J-1 visas. They say the extra staff might be needed to ensure they can provide childcare for summers to come. In Auburn, Maine, I'm Robbie Feinberg for Marketplace.
This final note on the way out today, a quick check-in on the supply chain and the bottlenecks in it that have been contributing to inflation. Makes sense, then, that as the pace of inflation is easing, so are some of those bottlenecks. The Port of L.A., which we've been keeping an eye on throughout the pandemic, now has a backup of just 10 container ships waiting for a berth. That's down from a record 109 ships in January. No time for economic context today. Too much inflation news, you know. Our media production team includes Brian Allison, Jake Cherry, Drew Jostad, Gary O'Keefe, Jeff Peters, Charlton Thorpe, Juan Carlos Torrado, and Becca Weinman. I'm Kimberly Adams, and we'll be back tomorrow, everybody.
This is APM.
With access to so much information, it's hard to feel like an informed, discerning citizen. That's why on Make Me Smart, which is a podcast from Marketplace, we make it easy for you to stay in the know. Hi, I'm Kai Rizdahl. Every weekday, Kimberly Adams and I unpack the latest from Washington, D.C.
The Senate Minority Leader has announced that he will step down as the Republican leader.
What's happening in AI? I mean, don't buy at the top, but holy cow, artificial intelligence and all the companies related to it are the hot new thing. And we do the numbers.
So as a refresher, inflation is the rate of increase in the prices of things. It's not just sort of things getting more expensive. It's the speed at which things get more expensive.
Because in a world that's constantly changing, we all need to stay smart. Listen to Make Me Smart wherever you get your podcasts.